The cases, stories, myths, and legends covered in this podcast are important for a whole array of reasons. This podcast was born from a want to tell Welsh stories, but today's case is a little bit more personal than most. In fact, there are only three episodes to which I have a connection of some sort, and today's is no different. Because today's case took place in my local area. In fact, it took place in the street next to the one in which I grew up. And while it was over 20 years ago, my memories of that period are strong and defining. I remember being told about it. I remember police visiting to ask when we last saw the victim. And while it's grainy, unclear, and no doubt influenced by what we learnt had happened, I vaguely remember the victim. Not in detail, not in a personal capacity, but as someone I saw walking through the street. I have this one overwhelming memory of her pushing her pram past our house while walking somewhere unknown. I don't know when it's from, if it's entirely real even, but it's always stuck with me. My research into this case also reminded me how subjective memory can be, and also how impactful rumours are. There was so much information about this case that I remember from the time that I now know to have been false. I want to offer a word of caution before we get into the body of this episode, because today's case is truly horrific. It contains domestic abuse, drug abuse, potential SA, and the murder of a woman and a young baby. This episode is not appropriate for many, and if any aspects of this might be triggering, I'd urge you to stop the episode now. In truth, this isn't a case that I really wanted to cover. Not because I don't believe the story deserves to be told, because it does, but because I understand the harm that retelling these stories can cause. However, that was until fairly recently when I realised something. Within the next 2 years, the killer could be up for parole. Something that left me feeling incredibly angry at the British justice system. For obvious reasons, this is something that I feel warrants a conversation. And for that reason, in today's short episode, we are discussing the murder of Louise and Tia Lahomme. Say that Louise Lahomme had always been close with her mother. Raising her as a single parent, the pair had a good and close relationship. In fact, in an article published in the Daily Mirror in 2005, Louise's mum, Gina, commented that until Andrew Roberts came into the picture, the pair had never really argued. As a young adult, Louise had met someone, and for a brief period of time, she left the family home. It was during this relationship that Louise was to give birth to her first daughter. Although her name is in some of the media articles, I don't see much benefit in it being needlessly reported here. Her privacy is important, and so I am choosing to omit her name. Following the breakdown of that relationship, Louise and her first daughter moved home, and for a short while, they all lived with Gina. A little while later, Louise managed to get her own home, and it was while living here that she met Andrew Roberts. Many of Louise's loved ones disliked him from the beginning, noticing traits and behaviours that put them on edge. In the Daily Mirror article formerly discussed, Gina admitted that Louise had been open about Roberts' drug addictions, and that while she wasn't happy about it, Louise was a loving and compassionate person. Louise openly argued to Gina that Roberts deserved a second chance. A year later, Louise found out that she was pregnant, and while there were difficulties within the relationship, Louise was determined to keep her family together. Just 2 months after finding out that she was pregnant, Robert started using drugs and the arguments intensified. It's since been reported that Robert then spent a period of time in prison, with his daughter Tia being born whilst he was locked away. Without being intrusive, it was impossible for me to find out the exact date of Tia's birth. How long he was behind bars has never been made public, but it's believed to have been related to several theft-related charges. On the 10th of January 2003, Roberts returned to Tylerstown, the village where Louise and he had lived before his prison stint. When Roberts was released, he reunited with Louise and the couple resumed their relationship for a short period. However, things were not great, and it's believed that Roberts had become increasingly controlling and abusive. What we now know, but probably didn't know then, was how dangerous this period of a relationship is for a woman. A plethora of research has now demonstrated that the breakup stage is often the most dangerous time for a woman who is being abused. During the eventual court proceedings, witnesses gave evidence which illustrated this, with one witness recounting two particular incidents. Shortly after his release from prison, she had attended a nightclub in Merthyr with Louise Roberts and a number of other friends. She told the court that, quote, he would stand by her if she left him to go to dance and would hardly allow her to leave his side, end quote. A few days later, the same witness hosted a party in her house in Aberdare, a village a short distance from Tylerstown. At the party, she was aware of tensions between the couple and witnessed one concerning incident. Quote, they were locked in the toilet, and when they emerged, Louise said Roberts had strangled her to the point of unconsciousness, end quote. At some point between this incident and the 15th of February, Louise is said to have ended her relationship with Roberts. It's since emerged that Louise and Roberts were witnessed arguing in the street where they lived. According to the witness accounts, Louise had told Roberts that she wanted him to leave, and he is said to have shouted, quote, right, if it's over, nobody else will have you or the baby, end quote. A few days later, on or around the 15th of February, Roberts returned to the home, having consumed drugs at a friend's house. On the 15th of February, the date it's now believed that both Louise and Tia lost their lives, Gina saw her daughter. She visited her mum's property with her eldest child and asked if her mum would watch the eldest daughter for the evening. Quote, she'd been arguing with Andrew and asked me to call her later, end quote. However, when Gina did call, she couldn't get an answer, but Gina presumed that everything had been sorted. This is the last time anyone is confirmed as having spoken to Louise directly, and she was officially last seen on the 15th of February. On the 16th of February, concerned that Louise had still not got in touch, Gina's brother visited the home address. It was Roberts who opened the door, telling the concerned relatives that Louise and Tia were visiting friends in the next village over called Ferndale. Something about this didn't sit right with Gina, who was confident that Louise would have told her had she made those plans. However, with little evidence to the contrary, they left the property. The following day, on the 17th of February, and still unable to reach Louise, Gina and family members visited Ferndale to look for Louise. They were not able to locate her, and at that point, Gina called the police. They then drove to the home address, with their concerns growing by the minute. The house was quiet, and with a sense of trepidation, one relative entered the property. Climbing up the house using a drainpipe and entering through an upstairs window, those outside, including Gina, Louise's mum, remember hearing a scream. Shortly after, the relative opened the front door. His face was white. He'd found Louise and Tia. At around 5:45 p.m., the discovery was officially made. Louise and Tia had been murdered. At the time of her death, Louise Lahomme was only 23 years old and her daughter Tia was 10 months. She was survived by her eldest daughter, who had of course been staying at her mother's address. The bodies had been located inside a child's bedroom underneath an overturned mattress. In a bid to prevent the bodies from being discovered, Roberts had thrown perfume or aftershave on them. On the 19th of February, the BBC confirmed that the police were seeking to interview Andrew Roberts. They appealed directly to him, as well as anyone else who might have seen him, pleading for information related to his whereabouts. At this point, they stopped short of calling him a suspect, simply suggesting that perhaps he had important information about the murders. It later emerged that between the murder and the discovery, which was just after he'd left the property, Roberts had continued to live at the home address. In the statement, police also confirmed that he had been seen leaving the home on Monday the 17th of February. The witnesses seem to have placed him as having left the scene shortly before Louise and Tia were discovered. At the same time, they also confirmed that they had arrested two men as part of their inquiries, aged 20 and 21, for an undisclosed but related crime. They had been bailed pending further investigation. While the autopsies had yet to be conducted, police were keen to stress that there was no evidence that either had been stabbed, one of the many rumours that I remember circulating at the time. It was later revealed that both had been strangled, Louise manually and Tia with an item of clothing. A few days later, on the 20th of February, Andrew Roberts was found in Tesco car park in Upper Boat, around 10 miles away from the home address. It would later be alleged that he had taken an overdose. At this point, Roberts was arrested, but was taken to hospital to be treated. A police guard remained stationed outside his room until he was fit enough to be interviewed. Court was scheduled for September, but on the 30th of March 2003, Louise and Tia were cremated before being interned in the local cemetery. It's since been reported by Gina that it took a number of years for Louise's surviving daughter to feel comfortable visiting the grave, but when she did, it was a moment that neither will ever forget. On the 19th of September 2003, Andrew Roberts pleaded guilty to both murders at Swansea Crown Court. His defence argued that Roberts was, quote, addled by drugs, and that his drug addiction was responsible for his actions. They argued that he had shown huge remorse and regret at his actions and had tried to end his own life on two occasions because of shame. His defence told the court that, quote, no words can express the remorse, shame, disgust, horror and guilt he feels, end quote. He then went on to say that if Roberts could turn back the clock, he would do so. He also told the court that, quote, Roberts had tried to take his own life shortly after committing the killings by hanging himself from banisters but failed. He took an overdose of paracetamol just before being arrested, leading to hospitalisation, and at one point, doctors believed he might need a liver transplant, end quote. The prosecution, Peter Griffiths, then a QC, now a KC, disputed this and argued that Roberts was obsessive and jealous as a partner, something that was demonstrated by the above account detailing a witness's experiences of having seen the couple. He also outlined the prosecution's belief that both victims had, quote, serious sexual injuries, end quote. In the summing up, the judge agreed with the prosecution, acknowledging that while he was a drug addict, this was no excuse for the awful crimes he'd committed. During the proceedings, it was revealed that semen had been found on both bodies, leading the police and prosecution to believe that a sexual assault had taken place. It was something that Roberts denied, but also something that the judge took into consideration as part of his sentencing. At the time of the sentencing, the judge argued that even the suggestion of potential sexual assault of both victims warranted a lengthy sentence. So, how long did Andrew Roberts get? 24 years. Lowered to 23 years on appeal. There was a brief outburst of anger in the courtroom as Roberts was led to the cells, with male members of Louise's family rushing towards him. Following his sentencing, members of Louise's family spoke to the press and expressed their sadness and anger over what had happened. One of them, Jeff Llewellyn, commented that, quote, "We can't get over it at all. Drugs had nothing to do with it. He was never any good," end quote. In the February of 2004, a year after the murders, Roberts wrote a letter to Louise's mother asking that two of, quote, "his items" be returned to him. He claimed that a gold signet ring and a pair of gold earrings within the property belonged to him. The family contacted the police, who advised that they might be required to prove ownership and that if they couldn't, they might be expected to defend the matter in a court. The family vowed to do so, with Louise's mum revealing that she'd already planned what to do with the jewellery. It was her intention to melt the gold down and to have something made for Louise's surviving daughter as a tribute, something tangible to connect her to her mum and baby sister. In the article, which was published on the BBC, Louise's sister, Tanya, offered a comment that, quote, "Roberts is not only showing no remorse, he's actually taunting us, rubbing our noses in it," end quote. The timing of this letter doesn't feel like a coincidence, and I'm inclined to believe it is more sinister. This letter was sent exactly a year to the day that he murdered Louise and Tia. In many ways, that is where the story ends, but there was another development in 2021 that temporarily placed Robert's name back in the media spotlight. However, this time around, he was merely a footnote in a story. It was revealed that Roberts had been having an affair with a female prison officer and that she was now facing criminal charges as a result. Aged 38, he'd engaged in a 2-month affair with a married mother of three, with him also somehow having had access to a mobile phone whilst in prison. At the time, Roberts was being housed in HMP Albany on the Isle of Wight, and the affair is said to have taken place between the 20th of August and the 20th of December 2018. The woman in question, 32-year-old Lauren McIntyre, was accused of a plethora of offences relating to her conduct and her relationship with Roberts. The first offence related directly to the affair, something which is obviously forbidden and against the terms which are set out in the employment contract. The second offence related to the mobile phone which Roberts had, with McIntyre having been accused of not informing about this device and of providing him with her number. She then proceeded to contact him via the contraband phone. During the court hearing, which took place on the 7th of January, a few text messages between the pair were read to the court. I am only including these because they cast serious doubts on her defence, which we'll get into. In one, Roberts had texted McIntyre telling her that, quote, "Today was really hot and risky, but I'm needing you right now," end quote. To which she replied, quote, "So fucking risky, I like it though," end quote. That evening, she then sent another text which said, quote, "I still keep remembering the first time you kissed me," end quote. In addition to the messages, she was also accused of having sent him a picture. Finally, she was then accused of having sanctioned the beating of a fellow officer, with it being suggested that she'd asked Robert to beat a fellow prison officer. It was later revealed in court that she had also had an affair with that individual. Included in this was the fact that she failed to warn the officer or other prison staff of the intended assault. In fact, on the day it was due to happen, she texted Roberts saying, quote, "Do what you got to do," end quote. She had also provided Roberts with the phone number of the other officer in a bid to make him look like the corrupt one. Lastly, she was also accused of having held on to information regarding the corruption of other officers, and was said to have not informed about this. Her defence was that she had deliberately built this relationship with Roberts because she planned to utilise him as an informant. This defence perhaps falling short because of the fact that she didn't actually do any informing. She claimed that she gave Roberts her phone number as a test and to demonstrate to him that she trusted him. Her defense barrister then said that she had been, quote, dragged into Roberts' orbit. The judge disagreed and commented that McIntyre would have received training on the prevention of corruption and the inappropriateness of relationships with prisoners. As far as the judge was concerned, the actions were against, quote, the letter and the spirit of the law, end quote. Finally, the judge cast doubt on her entire defence, saying, quote, even if you initially gained his confidence as a means of exploiting wider corruption, you quickly moved on to having a close relationship with him, that you passed on information to him and developed a passionate sexual relationship, end quote. In the end, she was handed a 3-year sentence for the offence, with it amounting to gross misconduct and abuse of public trust. The judge added that due to the gravity of the defence, an immediate and serious custodial sentence was justified. Back here in South Wales, Louise's surviving daughter spoke to the media, commenting that seeing his name in the press brought the trauma back. She added that, quote, he deserves to be locked up for the rest of his life, not potentially coming out in 4 years, end quote. That article was written in 2021, meaning that that date is fast approaching. I fully echo what Louise's daughter said, because 23 years doesn't feel like a lot of justice. Here's the thing. I am not a huge fan of indefinite long sentences in most cases. I often think that there must be room for self-improvement and for people to be given a second chance. However, this case doesn't feel like one of those, and I'm concerned that he could be paroled. After all, he was a controlling, obsessive, and jealous partner who seems to have also sexually assaulted his victims. He's shown disregard for the law in prison, having accessed a phone and engaging in an illegal affair. Then there's the fact that he taunted the family with that letter. 23 years for the murder of a beautiful young mother and her beautiful baby daughter doesn't feel anything like justice.